Had the Indiana General Assembly's 2020 session not adjourned sine die last week, circumstances in the form of COVID-19 most likely would have brought about the same result. As of this taping, at least 21 of the 32 state legislatures that would be in session at this point have suspended some or all of their activities because of the virus. Hi, I'm John Schwanis, and on this week's program, our final show of the 2020 season, we'll look back on the just concluded session with two state house experts, and we'll do our best to figure out what might happen next. Indiana lawmakers, from the state house to your house.
Purdue Research Foundation's $1 billion Discovery Park District, where the Convergence Center is merging companies, investors, and entrepreneurs with Purdue innovators to address global challenges and advance life-changing technologies. More at discoveryparkdistrict.com.
Normally, our final program of the season features analysis from four members of the State House Press Corps. Well, given the aforementioned coronavirus outbreak, I think we'd all agree that these are not normal times. Accordingly, in deference to the CDC recommendation that we all stay at least 6 feet apart, we've trimmed our panel to two journalists, both of whom I respect a great deal, and both of whom regular viewers of public broadcasting will no doubt recognize. Brandon Smith, State House Bureau Chief for Indiana Public Media and host of Indiana Week in Review, which, as I like to say, airs on many of these same public broadcasting stations, and Nikki Kelly, State House Bureau Chief for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette, and my journalistic colleague on that same program, Indiana Week in Review. Thank you for braving the conditions.
Traffic was great.
Traffic may be the one.
Honestly, it was just nice to get out of the house.
Oh, well, reach out and tell. This is going to be interesting. We are going to be. But thank you for your heartiness against all odds here. Is there any scenario under which the 2020 session will be viewed as anything other than, oh, yeah, that's the 10 weeks that preceded the coronavirus outbreak?
Yeah, it's so weird because, obviously, while it was going on in other places in the world, it hadn't really hit the American shores quite yet as session was wrapping up. Right in the last few days of session, we started to get more stories, and that last literal day of session, that Wednesday, is when, like, the NBA canceled and we were close to, you know, the Big Ten tournament was probably going to be over and things like that. So a bunch of stuff started to happen literally right in those last couple of days of session. But it wasn't about coronavirus at all. It wasn't anything we even talked about until those final two or three days. So it's going to be interesting two or three or four years from now as we look back on the 2020 session, how we remember it. Because obviously, what happened during it is very separate from everything else that's happening in the world now.
I mean, up until 24 hours before they gaveled themselves in adjournment sine die, they were still trying to get out of town to accommodate the hundreds, if not thousands, of Big Ten basketball fans that were hungry for their salivating over their hotel rooms.
That last night was so surreal. Everyone was, you know, you were in the chambers and they're debating bills that are, of course, important to, you know, the state in their own realm, but everyone's on their phones and they're seeing flights canceled and this and that. And it was very surreal. And I don't think we realized at the time how different just one day later would be.
It was odd. Last week we had legislative leadership on, and I think I devoted the first 10 minutes to coronavirus, which, again, if you'd asked me 24 hours prior, that was not anywhere in the notes. So this is rapidly changing.
I mean, we only started asking questions of legislative leaders about, hey, before you guys leave, do you need to do something about coronavirus? And what they said at the time was, we've talked to the governor, and he's confident that he has all the authority that he needs to address this crisis anyway. But, I mean, that answer might be different.
I was going to say, who knows? In the end, the 2020 session might be 2020 session one. We might still have another 2020 session. Yeah. We'll see, depending on how things go in society, whether lawmakers need to come back in some fashion to make changes and improve different programs that will help people who are affected by the virus.
We already see a difference of opinion between the current governor and the gentleman who wants that job in the form of Eric Holcomb, the incumbent, and, of course, Democratic nominee Woody Myers, who says, get lawmakers back immediately, emergency session. We need, you know, to tinker with leave, sick leave and paid leave, and we need to deal with tax filing deadlines. We need to deal with any number of things that that apparently he thinks are not dealt with by the rather
broad like,
powers that are given to the governor.
Even something like price gouging laws. So Indiana's price gouging laws in code are a little narrow in that the only place the word price gouging appears in Indiana code is related to fuel prices. And the Attorney General a few days ago actually sent out a release saying, report what you can to me, but I can only go after fuel prices. Now the Attorney General is saying, well, I'm going to try to use this other law to maybe attack some of these problems, but it's much less clear, certainly. So if they did, for instance, have to come into a special session, something like that might be in the cards just to help give Indiana government, you know, statewide, as many tools as it can to address the problems that we're starting to see.
So if those Tennessee brothers that have been getting so much attention about hoarding the 17,000 bottles of hand sanitizer, I guess they could have had, they just picked the wrong state. Maybe they would have had more latitude to charge the prices they initially thought.
It's possible. Suggests that even if they don't come back for a special session, I wouldn't be shocked to see that on a legislative agenda in the future going forward.
Do you think there will be a special session?
Look, I don't know. Things are moving so fast. I will say, you know, money-wise, as far as using and moving around the surplus, the governor has a lot of authority. The State Board of Finance can meet and move things around. So just strictly using the surplus, I don't think they would need to. Now, when you start to talk about whether we would expand unemployment, like who is physically eligible to get unemployment, I've heard some people who have tried to apply and they're told, well, they're employers kicking it back saying, I haven't laid them off, I've just put them on 0 hours. So there's some questions about when does it count as you losing your job and things like that. So that might be an issue they might have to deal with.
Yeah, hard to imagine how they would do that through, I mean, executive orders are broad, but also, I mean, we've even started to see a few lawmakers, now admittedly the most conservative lawmakers in the General Assembly, who quite frankly don't usually spur a lot of legislation, to be fair, but we've seen some lawmakers starting to question about the governor's authority to shut down businesses and things like that. So if the governor tries to use his relatively broad executive authority to do something like expanding unemployment benefits, most people would probably just be okay with it, but there's a separate question between most people being okay with it and is this technically legal?
So the conventional wisdom, aside from perhaps some of these lawmakers you refer to who might have a little discomfort with the governor's closure of businesses. As I understand it, based on the statute that was enacted by the General Assembly after 9/11, the governor can do just about anything he wants. He can shut down utilities, shut off your water, shut off your power. He can keep you from driving anywhere, close businesses. He just can't mess with the legal transfer ownership of firearms. Am I right? I mean, that's the one thing I believe.
Yeah, that is not in the law specifically.
I think it actually is a law that runs counter to that after Katrina.
There are a lot of catch-all phrases, even in that broad authority he has, that say something like, or any other measure to ensure public health, you know? So, I mean, it's so wide.
Yeah,
I think that may be just, and that's in Katrina, when we had police in New Orleans apparently confiscating guns in the immediate aftermath of the storm, and that stuck in the craw of some lawmakers. So, even if there is no, and we can't sit here and predict whether there would be or not. Certainly, again, Democratic candidate for governor is calling for one sooner than later. Apparently, the governor feels he has what he needs at his disposal
right now,
in the Department of Health. What is the likely impact? This upsets the whole apple cart for what we thought was going to be not a predictable budget session, but it was going to be, you know, this was going to be the session of teacher raises. It was going to be, you know, maybe looking at some additional taxation on tobacco products and so forth. Does this throw everything out the window?
Absolutely.
For 2021? Yeah. Absolutely. And I was, you know, I interviewed Senate President Pro Tem Bray and Speaker Houston Wednesday night and brought up the whole teacher pay issue, which is, you know, they've been saying next year, next year, next year. Well, all of a sudden Wednesday night they were saying, look, we don't know what kind of world we're going to be in then. We don't know what our revenues are going to be, so we're not even going to venture to talk about teacher pay yet. We're going to see how it goes for a couple months before we sort of get into that mindset.
And again, because of the how fast things are moving, even in, what has it been, a little over 2 weeks since a week since the legislature adjourned? A little over a week?
How quickly
we
forget.
Lost all track of
time. I believe it was
the
wee hours of the 11th, and as we
over a week since the legislature adjourned. So much has happened between then and now that I think their answers today would probably still be different from what they were a little over a week ago. But yeah, the answer is we have absolutely no idea what the world is going to look like in 8 months. And so it's really impossible to make any predictions about what, if anything, the state can do money-wise. I mean, the state is in good financial position to weather some kind of storm, but I'm also not sure we've ever seen a storm quite like this one.
And I'm guessing if this were really, really bad, that $2 billion
it's going to disappear real fast if we have to tap into it like that.
People are talking about, like, on the federal level, they're talking about stimulus and sending money. And so people are sort of like, well, what is the state going to do to stimulus? But I generally feel like the state's surplus isn't to do that kind of stuff. It's to literally keep the lights on for state government when tax revenue doesn't come in. So there is difference. Like, some people are saying we should spend the surplus to help. Others are saying, no, we need it to literally keep, you know,
state
the state police
running.
Working right. And, you know, stuff like
or
that
like
to
if
pay
you,
them.
Do you want unemployment benefits? Because there will presumably be help from the federal government, as there is in any kind of recession, you get help from the federal government to boost your unemployment insurance trust fund so that you can pay people the benefits that they need. Separate from that, like, there are people who have to run those programs in state government. They need to get paid. And so that's what the surplus is for. Plus, the federal government, the things that the federal government is doing right now in terms of these stimulus measures, the ones they've passed and the ones that they are talking about passing in the next week, 2 weeks, whatever it is, that's just going to create debt, even more debt than the federal government already has. But the federal government can do that.
Which is the only entity that can, really.
Right. Indiana mostly cannot. I mean, literally, there are things in the Constitution that says they can't create debt under, except for very limited circumstances, et cetera, et cetera. But it really can't create that kind of debt. So a stimulus package like the kind you see from the federal government literally is not possible at the state level in a lot of ways.
And I'm guessing the tendency here, as we often see it's with state legislatures, not only this one but across the country, let's wait and see what federal government does, whether it's on the issue of unemployment or paid sick leave that is above and beyond what is available now. And that probably makes sense, I guess, to a certain extent. Yeah. It seems to me Indiana will have to deal more with some of the economic development issues, which, again, it's not as if they're alone. That's everybody. But we've even seen some, I guess, in the scheme of things, relatively minor. We had the cancellation of the state's first global conference, trade conference, which was going to be in the latter part of April. Again, some would say that's a minor thing. But I'm sure once we see, you know, the economic impact of some of the big events that happen, say, in Indianapolis in the month of May, if those, you know, arguably don't go off, and I guess that's
well,
not.
A lot of what we see, like, for instance, a good comparison for Indiana is what just happened in Kentucky. So they canceled the Derby.
September Derby is going to be an interesting one, right?
But because there's so much we don't know, it is legitimate to raise the question of, will we be able to have it in September? So I would suspect that if the time comes to postpone the 500, which feels like we're getting closer, and they're postponing or canceling a lot of the events that lead up to that already. It feels like we're getting closer to that. So I'm sure it will be a postponement, because some of it is just a hopefulness that you want to instill both in the organization and in other people. Like, we don't want to cancel things, but I'm not sure we're going to be able. I mean, I don't know. I hope that we can have a Kentucky Derby in September and a Indianapolis 500 in July or whatever they choose to do. But the reality is, like so many other things, right now, in this very moment, we have no earthly
idea. Last question about this, because we're here to talk about the session, I guess, too. Indiana's primary. You know, where are we with that? Now, we had the neighboring state, Ohio, the governor.
Two neighboring states. So Illinois didn't cancel theirs. Ohio did eventually.
And said that it might now be, might, it's sort of, I guess, not set in stone, maybe June.
Well, about a week ago, the Republican and Democrat Party chairmen sent a letter to the Election Commission asking them to free up, allowing everyone to vote absentee by mail-in with no reason. You know, now you have to check the box that says, I'm going to be out of town or something. So they just want everyone to be able to mail in their vote. And also, you can they want to push back the date that you could, you know,
mail
seek
it in
that.
By. Right.
Seek, I think April 23rd is currently the date which you can ask for the application.
Right.
They
like
want to push that back some. The Election Commission has the authority to do that on their own in law, but I haven't heard from them in the last week, reached out yesterday. They haven't had a meeting or anything like that.
So
I think that's the way they're looking for now instead of, you know, if we can just let everyone vote absentee, maybe we can still have it. I'm not sure how
that works.
Yeah,
if everybody could vote by mail, and voting by mail means also, because this is one of the things that the party chair has asked for, which is you should be able to request the ballot by mail as well as send it in by mail.
Yeah.
Because in a lot of cases, you have to go and pick it up.
Which arguably would defeat the purpose.
And so, yeah, so we haven't heard from the Election Commission yet. Obviously, we're like a month and a half away, but we can't, like, they have to, if they're going to do this.
It should be soon.
It has to be soon because, I mean, the physical act of all of these county clerks whose offices aren't probably fully staffed as it is because of this, the act of physically mailing out all those ballots. Now, the ballots they have, but physically mailing them out is something they are not probably currently prepared to do. And so they will need a little time to get that up and running. And so we can't wait too much longer for some sort of guidance on what we're going to do.
This is, I'm being facetious, but we all need a little bit of humor. Not that I'm guaranteeing any humor, but at least Indiana may not be the tail end of the primary season anymore.
Yeah,
you were just asking about that recently on Week in Review. All right, let's shake out the cobwebs, open the mental file cabinet, get the rust out, and let's go back to, now that we've established when the session was over and the 10 weeks, we more or less remember that. Let's, obviously, we could go all over the board here. Let's divide it up in just a few categories. Healthcare, since that seems like as natural a segue as any, you know, it was a mixed bag. We went into the session thinking a lot of promises. It was in the governor's agenda. We're going to tackle the high cost of healthcare, which studies had shown prior to the session Indiana's some of the highest. I know we could debate whether that study is valid, but did we come away chipping away at that
problem? I think
problem?
What they tackled was transparency on costs. They didn't tackle the costs themselves. No. I mean, yeah, you're not going to get surprised by an out-of-network bill because they're going to tell you beforehand now, but you're still going to get the bill. You know, those are kind of the things we came up with. And yeah, we're going to create this database where you can see the costs and kind of know what you're
going to get your good faith estimate.
But, you know, toward the end of the session, they had tossed in some other items that might have had a real impact on cost, and then they backed away when the hospitals balked.
Yeah, so there's a couple of examples of things they could have done but didn't. So one of them, on surprise billing, there were versions of that bill or a version of that legislation that passed through, I think, one chamber that said you cannot get a bill from a provider that's in-network that charges an out-of-network price. So if you went and had knee surgery and your anesthesiologist wasn't in-network but everything else was, the anesthesiologist had to charge you the in-network rate. Had to.
Right.
That ended up being as Nikki pointed out,
bit.
Well, we're going to tell you about it. Now, Republican legislative leaders say, well, if you know about it ahead of time and you're uncomfortable with that cost, well, you can shop around. I don't know in what universe you can shop for healthcare prices like that. I can't, and I live in a pretty big city with a decent healthcare plan.
If I need surgery,
I'm going with my doctors, with my hospital system. I don't think it's reasonable to expect people to shop around for a lot of their healthcare costs. The other thing that propped up was, this gets a little technical, so some of us hesitated to try to talk about it too much because it is really complicated.
Well, I can tell you what you always tell me. Go fast because we've got all this other stuff to talk about.
It's called site of service. Basically, if you go to a doctor's office that's part of community hospital system, but it's 3 miles away from the hospital, it's just an office building somewhere, but it's under community, they can charge you the higher rate, or really your insurance company, they can charge you for the higher rate that's associated with on the hospital property, even though you're really not. What the bill originally would have done is say, no, 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 no. Only if you are literally on that hospital campus can you charge those higher rates. They got rid of that entirely.
And also on the health front, I guess if you're looking at keeping score here, you know, there was the big push, even in the governor's agenda, again, for accommodations for women, try to address the issue of infant mortality in our state, which we've struggled with for a long time. You know, pregnant women, new moms, give them some accommodation. The cost of insulin controls. Now, we did take the requirement that it be a prescription. I think we were the only state in the country where it was a prescription. That's off, but no relief directly for. And then, of course, I'm guessing health advocates would certainly celebrate the increase in the basically codifying what the federal government did in terms of higher age limits for smoking and vaping, and in fact harsher penalties.
Obviously, because the feds already raised the age to smoke and vape from 18 to 21, we just had to bring our code in line with that. But the bigger thing was,
well, it would have been meaningless actually if we hadn't had.
Well, too, but also. The harsher penalties for retailers is obviously what lawmakers are hoping moves the needle a little bit.
Basically
on that.
Double. I mean, unless it is, they're repeat offenders.
It's double even if you're a repeat offender. It's just those fines get even bigger because you're doubling a higher amount. But yeah, so it's doubling the penalties on retailers, and the hope is that if you punish them a little more, they will get a little more serious about really clamping down on who they're selling to.
Education. I mean, again, this was the Red for Education Day. On Organization Day, we had 15,000 teachers wearing red. They were back, by the way, at the end of the session with the red again, keeping things in mind. I don't want to devote a lot of time here because that was pretty much taken care of early on. No teacher raises.
Well, teacher pay was taken care of early on, but they did do some significant things for education.
Touch on that.
They decoupled teacher evaluations from test scores, which is a major change.
Huge change.
I mean, not only did we hold them harmless from the latest test, but we decoupled them permanently. So that's a big change. Also, they opted or made optional this externship where teachers were going to have to go out and learn
about
what
jobs in the community or how to produce
their community needed
workforce.
And the skills. So that is now optional. So that was a big change that they got as well.
Other one might be also with referenda. Now, at least there's a stage set, some would say. At public school advocates might say that this is either, well, it's the proponents of sharing revenue from levies or from referenda with charter schools is seen by opponents as a sweetener in the deal, but critics of the plan would say it just opens the door to forced sharing. Is that
that's the concern that a lot of public school public education.
So we have the referendum, we do the campaign, we struggle,
and
we're going to share.
Their concerns are twofold. One, it's the camel's nose under the tent, as they like to say, which is, well, if you make it optional now, you're going to make it mandatory.
It's really easy to change a may from a shall.
Exactly,
a may to a shall.
But the other concern is that even with the may provision, I'm a charter school. I want your public referendum money, and if you don't give it to me, or if you say you're not going to give it to me, I'm going to tell you, well, I'm going to campaign against
right.
it. I'm going to make sure nobody gets money. Now, will we see
which
that?
Is arguably a motivated audience, too. I
right.
mean, a constituency.
Yes. Will we see that? It's tough to say, but it is a potential that is created by this change in
also,
law.
Also, the weird thing about this, and it came at the end of the session with no real
yes.
testimony, but also is I couldn't find anyone who really wanted it. Like, there was no school out there saying, we want to share our money.
That's right.
There was, I mean, it just sort of came out of nowhere. There wasn't a real constituency pushing it, at least publicly. So it was just sort
and
of
I
odd.
Think
it's,
which
it's,
feeds the
it's interesting
the,
because
yeah.
we might have known that a little, or that might have been more clear if they'd raised this issue at all during the session.
Exactly.
Earlier, I mean, there was really no time for public testimony on any of
that. That happened on a couple bills. Now I'm getting off my my categories, but let's bring that up real quickly because there were several things where there were not just little amendments. There were, you know, strip and insert 75 page in. I mean, these were complicated sorts of things on any number of things. The most obvious, or most controversial, and perhaps most impactful, being the whole nullification of local control or measures to help tenants in with their in vis-a-vis their landlords, and now that's a no-go. What's the deal here with that?
I mean, so I'm actually going to be really interested to see if the governor signs that, because I think we're staring down the barrel of a world in which evictions might become a little more prevalent for a while, as the economy certainly starts to suffer, as we expect it will, as it probably already is. So this was not heard throughout.
That's not.
Oh
not
no, that won't concern. That won't that, stop him from signing.
Yeah,
anything.
This would be
no,
more no, no. just
this
the practical
be, this
considerations.
Would be, yeah, this would be. What does it look like? right now, you know, again, a week out, 2 weeks
Although
out.
If you're looking at that bill in isolation, that provides more protections than most of the state has for landlord-tenant. It's only in terms of the Indianapolis ordinance, which would have gone further. But most of the state doesn't have those protections at all.
That's true.
But the whole notion of home rule being sacred until it isn't. And the governor, we would argue, would have signed to bolster your notion that it wasn't just a matter of lack of transparency. Of course, we had coming out of nowhere, arguably, the whole Curtis Hill attorney general situation about who's eligible to serve, who's eligible to run. That actually seemed to be on rails, have the governor's support until the Senate Republicans basically put the brakes
on. They just could not get on board with it. They were really stuck on the whole, this should be up to voters in the election. And it was really crazy. At one point, the Senate Republicans offered a proposal that literally would have said he couldn't run again, but he could still be attorney general, which makes no sense.
And by the way, a proposal that they offered as a compromise, but didn't have the support of their own caucus. Like, the leadership proposed this publicly to House Republicans and said, well, what about this? House Republicans didn't like it, but they were willing to get whatever they could get, basically. And then Senate Republicans took it back to their own caucus and came out and said, oh, yeah, no, we can't support that either.
Maybe.
Like, their own idea.
And as we run out of time here, unfortunately, the one thing we haven't talked about that I guess I would argue will be a buzz generator certainly come July, and that is hands-free devices only.
Yes.
No cell phones while you're driving.
Yeah,
man.
You
got
to put your
road.
Phone down. No holding it, checking your email and stuff. Get a mount. Get a, you know, maybe if you don't have Bluetooth, just get a
little earpiece.
Is this a big deal? I mean, is this going to be a big stir? I mean,
So first of all, it's for all seven of us who were on the roadway this morning, we'll have to start paying attention to that, I suppose. But part of the
way you have roots in Illinois and other states where you're used to it.
I am used to this, actually. I have been for a long time. The key here is going to be enforcement. And certainly there was going to be a huge push when this law becomes effective in July. The question will now be, what other things are the police focused on come July? It should be. The buzzword around this was culture shift. That's what they're trying to create. They're trying to create a culture shift that they admit will take time. But you have to do that because it is really dangerous.
And if there had been unmanned cameras in work construction zones, that might have been another matter altogether.
Didn't have that.
Thank you very much, you guys. I appreciate it. Again, under any circumstances, I appreciate it. But certainly, given what we're facing as a society right now, I greatly appreciate your input. Again, my guests have been Brandon Smith, State House Bureau Chief for Indiana Public Media and host of Indiana Week in Review, and Nikki Kelly, State House Bureau Chief for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette and a regular commentator on that very same weekly program. For more information, episode streams, and other extra content, visit us on the web at wfyi.org/lawmakers. And remember, you can get our show on demand from Xfinity. Well, that concludes another edition and another season of Indiana Lawmakers, the state's longest-running public affairs program. I'm John Schwanis, and on behalf of WFYI Public Media, Indiana's other public broadcasting stations, commentator Ed Feigenbaum, and producer Brad McQueen, I thank you for joining us, and I invite you to come back in January for the start of the General Assembly's 2021 session and Indiana Lawmakers' 40th season. Until then, take care.
Purdue Research Foundation's $1 billion Discovery Park District, where the Convergence Center is merging companies, investors, and entrepreneurs with Purdue innovators to address global challenges and advance life-changing technologies. More at discoverypartdistrict.com.